Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. This is another edition of the Gregory Crawford on Basketball Show. We do this show every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Pacific Time. And as I say every week, if you cannot listen live, you certainly can listen to the podcast by going to www.blogtalkradio.com and just punch in Gregory Crawford on Basketball, and you'll get every single show that we have ever done, and there are a lot of them. But, you know, we love this first Wednesday of the month because that gives us a great chance to talk with Kip Ione, the outstanding men's basketball coach at Willamette University, who is also a really outstanding human being. People love to hear him on this show. And, Kip, that's factual, so congratulations.
Well, I appreciate you. I'm obviously doing a great job paying people to say good things about me, I guess.
I don't think so. I don't think you make that much money at Willamette to pay the people.
Oh, you got that right. You got that right. So no, I'm happy to be on with you, Greg. I'm glad the Cubs game got over in time for us. I'm just glad the Cubs game got over in time for us to talk. There might be some people listening. I know that game was capturing the attention of the whole country.
Yeah, I've soured on baseball. They didn't have my man Dale Scott in the playoffs this year. I'm firing. So the heck with them. Kip, let me ask you a question to start with. That, you know, I was thinking the other day when I was driving car, and that's dangerous, but I was thinking that the Northwest Conference is kind of unique. You can start practicing on the 15th of October. You can start playing the regular games on the November 15th, and you're done about the middle of February. You got a lot of work to do in a short time frame.
You know, that's a very good point. You know, our schedule is, you know, unlike some of the, you know, the scholarship schools that can start a little bit earlier than us, and obviously their seasons carry on a little bit longer than ours. Ours, you know, it's a pretty intense situation set up for you where, you know, you're playing every Friday, Saturday, basically, especially for us this year. That's every Friday, Saturday from that November 18th weekend all the way through conference. So you better have a pretty good handle on how you're going to prepare your guys each week, because, you know, Monday through Thursday is your prep time. You better find a way to maximize that time you get with them, because there's two good teams coming in, whether it's non-conference or Northwest Conference play, to come see you every single weekend.
Kip, you're noted as by your peers as doing a great job at Willamette, and your ex-players certainly have a lot of affection for you. I watch it on social media when you come on here. I think that's terrific. But how do you, as an expert basketball coach and successful one, instill confidence in your players?
Well, that's a good question, because I think as a younger coach, you get caught up in the frustration of, oh, you know, as a player, I could have done that. How come my guys that I'm coaching now can't? And as you kind of get older and more experienced in the game, as you grow up as an assistant through becoming a head coach, you realize it's got very, very little to do with what you know, what you did, or what you're drawing, and more about what the kids can actually perform with out there. So I think you try to find out exactly. You got to do a good job evaluating what each of your kids' strengths and weaknesses are, and actually being very, very honest about it with them and with yourself as the coach. What can this player do? Where can we put him in our system that his strengths are maximized and his weaknesses are hidden or minimized as much as possible? So I think it's very easy that if you put a kid in a spot where he's not very good, his strengths of his game are not maximized, you can be very frustrated, and then that leads to you yelling and screaming or being down on a player when really, as the coach, you're the one that's put him in a position to fail, and then you're trying to act surprised when he does. So I think that comes down to being very, very honest and setting up an evaluation system in the early part of the season where you feel pretty good about what you know your kids can do as a group and as an individual, and then going about as a staff trying to plan your system around their strengths rather than trying to force them into what you think they should be able to do.
Good. How are you feeling? Here we're on November 2nd, soon to hit November 3rd. How are you feeling about your 16-17 Willamette Bearcats as you watched them in practice and scrimmages?
Well, I think some of the things we thought we were going to be really good at have come to fruition. I thought we were going to be very versatile and have a bunch of different ways to play the game as far as lineup-wise. And I think the kids have done a great job proving that. And I think there's also a little bit of it where we're a little bit farther ahead defensively than I thought we were going to be able to be just because we had so many new people in the lineup and getting used to the system. They lost three starters. But the young kids, you know, now that are juniors and now that are sophomores, even some of our freshmen, their learning curve has been pretty short, and they've picked up our stuff defensively. And I like where we're at defensively in this, you know, early part of the season compared to where we've been in the past.
You know, speaking of defensively, I'd love for you to comment on this. I've often thought in the game of basketball on almost every level, offense is a skill. Defense is grit, determination, and communication.
You know, I think there's absolutely some truth to that. I think especially when you talk about the communication part, I don't know if there's a team in any level that's ever been considered a good defensive team, even if you had five great individual athletic defensive players that didn't talk to each other on the court. You know, and I think that's a struggle probably every coach you bring on with you is, would admit, like, I can't get over how much my guys talk off the floor. But then when we get them on the court, it's a real struggle to pull those words out of their mouth and get that, you know, the loud gym going. But I think what we've done as a staff this year, and it's been hard to do, is we've tried to shut our mouths as much as possible in those settings. You know, it's real easy as a coach when you're in a shell drill or you're in a ball screen defensive drill and you do all the talking for them. Switch, switch, rotate. That's you, high hand. And then suddenly when the game starts, you're so surprised that they're not doing it. Well, that's because you did it all week. So, you know, it's been awkward and sometimes in the gym for us when it's so quiet. But gradually we've started to find the guys on our team that have loud voices, the guys on our team that are willing to step up and direct traffic, so to speak. So it's been a, like I said, I'm a very pleased with where we're at as far as that communication piece, because it's not coming from us. It's coming from the leadership and some surprising sources of kids who maybe weren't on the depth chart, you know, as a shooter or as a ball handler, but man, they communicate out there, and that's a skill set. You know, being a communicator is something that goes directly on their skill set evaluation, and that might get a guy some minutes because we can trust them to talk through everything on the floor.
You know, speaking of doing all that and all the things you're doing in practice, what are maybe two or three critical things? And I know there's many, I'm obviously, and everybody that knows that, but two or three critical things in your expert opinion that determine playing time on your team?
You know, for us, I think it is, it's the number one thing I think is trust in assignment. I think it's a factor on both ends of the floor that you can trust a player when you put them out there that they know what they're supposed to do, when they're supposed to do it, and they act on that. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to make the shot every time. That doesn't mean they're going to get every rebound. But they're in the position they're supposed to be in that you have, you know, set up in your scheme. You can trust that kid out there in the chaos of a basketball game to be where he's supposed to be. I think that's a huge thing. And then after that, I think it's the person that knows their job the best and does it. You know, I think as coaches, we spend a lot of the preseason and probably a lot of the offseason trying to define roles and get players to accept roles that maybe they wouldn't have, you know, laid out for themselves. But once you get a kid that knows his job, you can trust him, and then he goes out and embraces it and does it, no matter what that is. Maybe it is your leading scorer. He knows he's got to put the ball in the basket. Or it's your 12th guy that knows he's got to get a deflection and a charge or he's not going to get any minutes this week. If you have a team full of guys that know their job and go do their job and embrace their job, I think you got a chance to win.
You know, speaking of the 12th guy, you know, how do you like your bench to be? Do you want them, obviously, to be cheering and active, but kind of tell our listeners what you expect when people are sitting there on the bench and they're not playing.
Right. Well, that's a great question. I think it's probably an evolving evaluation for myself as far as what we do expect. And I think it's very easy to see on film even when your bench isn't doing what they're supposed to as far as just their body language or their level of energy. But at the same time, when it's easy to point that out, the hard part is how are you teaching it? You know, is it just talk? Is it film sessions about just let's watch our timeouts? guys staring off into the stands at their girlfriends, or guys really dialed in, their eyeballs are all on the whiteboard. I think that's the hard part of creating that bench culture is, are you setting it up during the week for Friday, Saturday to be pretty second nature to those guys, that even though you're not going to play, you have a checklist of what we expect from you, and then you go out and do it. You know, I think that's what I've been happy with our group, is our bench in certain game situations and scrimmages we had, they've been very enthusiastic, but they've also been dialed in and know what's happening. You know, it's one thing to be a cheerleader, and that's great, but if I put you in a game and you don't know what out-of-bounds play we're in, you're not helping us win either. So I think there's a fine line for those guys, and it's a tough job. You know, that's something we make our guys sign that I actually stole from my wife when she was a coach. It's called the hardest role amendment. And it literally says the hardest job in sports is not being in the game. Can you handle it? And once you sign your name on that, I mean, you're telling us no matter what we assign you to do, you're all in with it. And that's not easy. We give them a couple days to think about it, because we got 21 guys in the program. We can play five guys at a time. We can only dress so many people on the road. So there's going to be a ton of disappointment, a lot. But if you've signed that hardest role amendment, you've committed to us with your word that you can find a way to get it done.
Yeah, I love the point that you made there that, you know, it's great to be the cheerleader, but you better know what play we're running when you
right.
go in the game.
Exactly.
So you have to keep the emotions under control while you're still emphatically cheering for your teammates.
Yep, absolutely. And I think that's something we've tried to build into practice plans, especially these last 2 years, where we've tried to pick a couple days a week where, whether it's myself, a couple of my assistants, we just say, hey, coach, bring your whiteboard today. I'm going to call a bunch. I'm just going to blow the whistle a bunch and send guys to you. Draw up anything you feel like, and let's see who can actually execute out of that timeout setting. And then later on, we'll add the whole, you know, four or five extras. Stop it after you break the huddle and send them in and see if they paid attention. So just setting up kind of some of those little mini tests and those situations where you can find out who can we actually trust to pay attention and go execute. Because, you know, games, whether you're at Whitworth or you're at Linfield and the crowd's loud and it's a really pressure-packed situation, you can't really hear what the coach is saying. Can you actually follow along with what I'm drawing and go do it? And I think it's also a great test as a coach. Maybe my chicken scratch I'm putting on the whiteboard isn't very legible. Maybe I need to slow down. Maybe I got to use a different color. Maybe I shouldn't draw the full court. Maybe I should use the half court side. I think those are all considerations on the details that sometimes we can overlook that I think we got to pay attention to.
I'll throw out a little stat here that's kind of fun that, you know, a guy told me the other day that's in the Laker organization, and,
okay.
and it's factually true, Kip, and comment on it. But Magic Johnson, they always had Magic Johnson take the ball out of bounds when Riley was there, Pat Riley was there, because when he took it out of bounds underneath his own basket, the Lakers scored 83% of the time because
oh, wow.
of his decision making. And, you
yeah.
know, I think out of bounds plays are something that's, they're not sexy, they're not talked about
right.
by fans, they're not discussed in the paper, but, boy,
mm-hmm.
they're critical. And I guess the
oh,
second
yeah.
part of it is, You definitely want to get the ball inbounds, let alone score.
Yeah.
You can't afford a
yeah.
turnover.
Absolutely. No, that's a great stat and a great, you know, like kind of subset of a obviously one of the most successful franchises in Hoops history, paying attention to the details. And I think that's one of the reasons I gave one of my assistants, Jonathan Willis, he's our transition situations coordinator. Like his entire job is trans-O, trans-D, and baseline out-of-bounds plays. I don't mess with him because, you know what, I'm not as good as him at designing them. So, you know, we operate under the philosophy of we have a foundation, a formula we want all those to look like. But then that's literally Coach Willis's job is to figure out how we're going to be great in those situations. And I think it's been huge for our staff just assigning one of us to really dial into those, whether it's our stuff or what the opponents are doing. Because like you said, baseline out of bounds, maybe they happen 8 times a game. Well, those are probably the 8 times a game that coaches on both sidelines actually can affect the game. The rest of the time in hoops, the kids got to make plays. But on baseline out of bounds, you know, your scout, your draw, your design, that can really affect. That could be a 2-point game, and suddenly it's tied, or suddenly you take the lead because of a great situation that somebody that paid attention to blobs put in. So, you know, I'm happy. I'm going to tell Coach Willis he's got an 83% success rate to shoot for because his favorite team's the Lakers. So he's got a long way to go, but I trust him. He's working on it.
Yeah, he better attain that or else there's going to be trouble.
Right.
Hey,
exactly.
Speaking of your assistant coaches, Skip, it's a great time, I think, that, you know, one of the most underrated positions in all of sports is being an assistant.
Yep.
You kind of sometimes have to be a buffer, but you also have to be 100% loyal to the head coach. Talk about your assistants. I think they deserve some attention on this program.
No, I'm glad you gave me some time to do it because I think I've been lucky enough throughout my time at Willamette to really have some great people that fit the role you described. You know, currently on my staff, Coach Kevin McCray has been with me. This will be his seventh year. We met at McKay High School as teachers, and obviously he was on the hoop staff there and came over with me when a position opened up. So he's our quality control coach because I think he probably knows me better than anybody else on the staff and knows when to tell me enough is enough, calm down, and also has a great eye for the scheme overall. So I really appreciate his insights into what the practice flow is or into what that scout situation looked like. I'm lucky enough to have my third year with Jonathan Willis. Like I mentioned, our transition situations coordinator, our recruiting ambassador, just a guy with a ton of energy. I mean, this guy, I mean, he can get anybody off the couch and ready to roll and run through a wall. And I think that kind of voice, that positive voice, it doesn't have to be me pushing the guys a lot. It's been huge for us. He's a great individual assessor of what skill sets in our system our guys are lacking, and let's go design stuff to help them. New addition to the staff this year for us is Coach Nathan Colville, full-time assistant for us, came from a head coaching background, 17 years at the high school level, has really transformed our interior game, giving him all of our bigs, our fours and fives, and a guy that played for the Grizzlies, University of Montana, inside is just such detail-oriented in the footwork, the steps, and kind of a lost art, the inside game. You know, a lot of bigs these days step out and shoot threes, and we'd love our guys to continue to do that. But really, you know, being able to take advantage of duck-ins and seals and pin-downs, that's something he's really helped us with. And I like having his expertise and been the head coach himself, you know, at a high school program. So that's always good to lean on expertise of somebody else that's been in charge when you need second opinions. And also I'm lucky enough to have one of my former captains and all-conference players, Bubba Lugke, back with us as our advanced scout. So, you know, him having been in the film room with me for 4 years as a player, he's got a great eye for what I'm looking for in tendencies of other teams and in self-scouting our team. So he's taken a lot of being film work away from me, and I trust him to present us to as a staff. Hey, here's the breakdown. Here's how we're playing numbers-wise, analytics-wise, video clips-wise, and here's the teams coming up on our schedule. Here's how that plays into us game planning for them. So to be honest with you, Greg, there's sometimes in practice I'm lucky enough I can just walk around and talk to guys and coach effort and let my staff take care of the drills. You know, and I think that's a luxury as a head coach I've learned to embrace is I can shut up a lot more. And if I have smart people with me and they know the process of what I expect, I can count on the great execution they're going to deliver, whether that's in recruiting, whether that's in practice or player development. You know, I'm really lucky to have the people with me that I do.
And, of course, Kip, as you and I know, we both come from kind of a business intellectual background. I'm not saying that egotistically, but the most successful business people are people that can delegate and aren't afraid to delegate.
No, absolutely. That's something, you know, I think my Uncle John, who works in the business industry, is very successful. That's something he taught me this summer that I really had to sit down and pay attention to was, sometimes I think we can do too much as the boss. I think you can try to put your finger on everything and overmanage and spread yourself too thin to where you're giving great amount of effort, but the quality of the work you're doing is not very good. And I think I stretched myself too thin in the last couple of years, and I have great people, capable people that are able to take some of these things off my table and maybe do a better job than I was in those things. So why not empower them to do that? That gives me more time to do things that I think I bring to the table, and it's been a really good formula for us so far.
And obviously, as a coach at a Division III level, a head coach, you know, and so well thought of, as I mentioned earlier, you have to be able to adjust and adapt to change.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I think that's, you know, that can come in the form of another thing. Did admissions change the entrance requirements to Willamette? Did the tuition go up or down? Is the scholarship pool changed for, you know, merit awards for kids being geniuses? Did your budget as a program change? Can you afford the same staff makeup you had before? Travel budgets, can you get the same D3 schedule you had before? So all those things, you know, not just me, that's every coach in every sport at Division III. You better be able to pivot, and you better be somebody that can address a problem and not get stuck on the issues and just go find solutions. And that's what I've learned from a lot of the smart people that I work with at Willamette, whether it's, you know, Paige Swadner in the women's basketball program, Glenn Fowles in football, Aaron Swick in baseball. A lot of those people are problem solvers. And if you can be a problem solver rather than wasting your time worrying about, you know, woe is me and how is this unfair, I think you got a chance. Because, you know, everybody that we go up against is facing their own set of issues. They don't got time to worry about what you have to deal with.
Being a great academic institution that Willamette is, Kip, how does the student body react to basketball? I know,
mm-hmm.
you know, in almost every sport now, or every school, I should say, now in basketball, they want to see more students attending the games.
Right.
But students that aren't involved with your team, do they stop and talk to you? How's that come about?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's something that we're always trying to be creative with, and what is going to be the draw to get kids to the games. And we've been lucky. You know, I think last year we were close to 1,000 people per game at home games. And this past, on the 15th, when we opened up and did a Midnight Madness show at midnight, you know, we had about 300 people there. So Willamette, we're lucky in that about 80% of the student body is involved in some version of sports, whether that's varsity athletics or intramurals. So like I always tell recruits and then other people that are asking about what's Willamette like, we've got a lot of kids interested in every type of sport imaginable. So they might not be great at basketball, but they probably got a co-ed 3-on-3 intramural team. And so they're coming. You know, I think a lot of events on campus start either at the volleyball game or the football game or the basketball doubleheader, and then they go off into the night and do what college kids do. But I think we're lucky in that we have a student body that is aware. We've got a new direction in campus life with a great new dean of campus life, Ed Whipple, who's very dedicated to, let's make sure our story's out there. You know, with athletics, let's make sure the story of the teams and the story of the games is out there to make people aware. Because I think a lot of times at Division III, you've got so many smart kids at the liberal arts college setting. They have so many things they've got their hands in that if they don't know what is happening, they're busy. You know, it's not like they're choosing not to do anything. They're just busy. So you got to find a way onto their schedule. And I think that's been what we've been trying to work out. I think we're making a lot of headway in that regard.
And I think, too, along those lines, Kip, as I mentioned in the first part of the program, your ex-players speak so fondly of you, and I hear that all the time. But I think it's critical of any coach in college, you've got to stay in contact with those players for them as much as you can. And, you know, you got to almost treat them like they're still here.
Absolutely. No, you're totally right. And I think that's for me, you know, I can't speak for every other coach. There's obviously the need for your alumni relations, but for me, I think that's why I do it. You know, I think that's why you coach at Division III, is because you're given the platform not just to be a basketball coach and win games. So obviously we all love doing that. But at Division III and at Willamette, working for Val Cleary and previously Dave Rigsby, you know, you're given the platform. Hey, go create a family. You know, having seen Gordy James do that for me as a player, and then as assistant coach, see him do that with the, you know, with the players that we coach, it's been very easy for me to transition into, you know, this will be my eighth year of having a bunch of kids and big little brothers that turn into big brothers for other players in the team, and then they're all, it's like extended uncles. You know, we've got an alumni game coming up this weekend that is just, you know, we've got 17 guys coming back to play, and another 8 coming to hang out afterwards at dinner. So it's a lot of fun, and it makes it worthwhile. Like you mentioned, you know, I'm very humbled to hear that my former players have good things to say about me, but it's very easy for me to brag about them, you know, because they're all doing such great things, and no matter what the record was when they played for us, a great year, a struggling year, you know, they've always given us maximum effort and maximum commitment to our family here at Willamette. So like I said, I think that's why you do it at this level.
How important was it for you to having played and then been an assistant and now the head coach Denari Foreman is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Did that at Lewis and Clark. I know Justin
yeah.
Lunt didn't play at Puget Sound, but he was over at PLU, so he knew
right.
the league. I kind of
right.
like that.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a unique setup. You know, I'm not sure how often it gets done at the bigger levels, but at our levels, you know, there's a lot of sense of loyalty to where you come from. So for me, you know, and obviously for Denari, I'm sure it means a ton to go out there as the Bearcats coach or to go out, in his case, as the Pioneers coach. And I think it helps your program, and I think it helps the kids assign value to what they're doing when you can tell the stories. You know, you can kind of be the record keeper of who came before them, what came before them, what rivalries are important, why they still matter. You know, because it's not ESPN doing it for us. You know, it's us telling the internal stories of the guys that came before them, the great games that came before them. So I'm sure that's played a role in you know, in some of the energy that we can bring to the table as the coaches in this situation. And I know it means a lot to me to be able to say, hey, guys, I played here. I was an assistant here. Now, yeah, I'm the head guy, but I know every level of this program, the experiences that happen. So hopefully I can help you through whatever may happen to you. So that's obviously very important to me, and you know, one of the reasons that when the Bearcats win, it means triple what it usually, you know, would it somewhere else.
Kip, in conclusion, and great job tonight. It's fascinating to talk to you once a month. Every time I learn something, every time I talk to you, which is great, and I know our listeners do. But kind of take us out with your thoughts on the November-December schedule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to go through each game, but
right.
and I know you play them one at a time, but how you feel about non-league games,
yeah.
what they do to prep you for league
excited.
Games.
Yeah, I'm very excited about our schedule. You know, we play a ton of home games. You know, 7 of our 9 non-league games are at home, and even one of them is at Corbin here in Salem, so I'm excited for the guys to get comfortable kind of defending home turf. And I think that's important in our league to learn how to win games at Cone, because it's so dang hard to win games on the road. And then the one road trip we do have is over Thanksgiving in Colorado, and I think that's a great test for us at a great university at Colorado College, bringing in two really good teams from the MIAC, the Minnesota Conference. So I think we get a great balance of, hey, can we win at home and can we meet the challenge on the road? Because, you know, in our league, Northwest Conference, we start December 2nd, 1st and 2nd, we've got Whitworth Whitman. So we better get ourselves ready to roll or it's going to be a tough start. But I'm excited about it. I can't believe it's already November. But let's get the games going. I know our guys are ready to play other people.
Absolutely. Hey, Kip, we'll catch up with you this
Absolutely
first
great.
Wednesday of December, and when you will have played quite a few games, and it'll be
That's
a lot
right.
of fun to talk about that. But it's a lot of fun tonight, and keep up the great work down there, and I'll see you in person very soon.
That's right. Thanks, Greg. Have a good one.
You betcha. That's Kip Ione, the head men's basketball coach at Willamette University in beautiful Salem, Oregon, the capital of the state of Oregon. And they are a member of the Division III Northwest Conference. A great school, great basketball, great athletics, great tradition. And it's fun to talk to Kip every Wednesday, the first Wednesday of the month. Good night, everyone. Have a great week. Happy holidays to everybody, and Merry Christmas, Happy Thanksgiving, and don't forget to make your friends.